This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Response to the needs of transgender students in the school. The facilities will consist of 4 student bathrooms and 2 faculty bathrooms, all of which will have individual stalls. The bathrooms will be open to all students, regardless of their assigned gender based on their sex at birth. School administrators decided to make the change when guidance counselors continually raised the issue, saying that transgender students were uncomfortable using restrooms that represented rigidly interpreted traditional standards of what constitutes gender. Recently, similar matters have come to light around the country as schools struggle to create policy for transgender students among often hostile or unreceptive communities. This year, Portland Public Schools' legal representation sent school administrators guidelines for policies regarding transgender students, including directives concerning bathrooms.
A proposed ballot measure targeting Oregon's Public Employees Union just got a financial boost. The Oregonian reports that Lauren Parks, a wealthy Nevada businessman, just donated $6,000 to Initiative Petition 17, which would allow public employees to opt out of paying union dues. One of the chief sponsors is Washington County Attorney Jill Gibson O'Dell, who told the Oregonian that she is not critical of unions, but simply sees this bill as a debate about freedom of choice. Currently, public employees in Oregon have the choice on whether they can join a union, but most are still required to pay union dues as a fair share employee. Such employees are still represented by the union in collective bargaining and may be eligible for a yearly rebate for the portion of their dues spent on activities not related to collective bargaining. Initiative Petition 17 has already collected 1,000 sponsorship signatures that are needed for the ballot of title. The so-called Public Employee Choice Act still needs over 87,000 signatures to qualify for the November 2014 ballot.
The arsenic contained in fluoridating chemicals costs the United States up to $6 billion a year in added health costs, according to a recent peer-reviewed article appearing in the Journal of Environmental Sciences. KBOO's Joe Meyer spoke with lead author Dr. William Hersey and asked him to run the numbers for Portland's proposed fluoridating chemicals.
My name is John William Hersey, and I'm currently chemist in residence at American University. I came here after retiring from the Environmental Protection Agency, where I was senior scientist in the risk assessment division of the toxics office.
When we talk about putting fluoride in our water, what are we talking about?
My understanding is the chemical that is intended for use up there in Portland is hydrofluorosilicic acid. And in fact, I just published a paper with several of my students and my former colleague, Bob Carton from EPA, showing that the amount of arsenic that is in that compound is enough to be causing the United States as a society as a whole to be spending probably in between $1 and $6 billion a year treating the lung and bladder cancer cases that come along with that arsenic level in the HFSA. That's completely aside from the toxicity that's associated with the fluoride. That's just the little extra something that comes along at no extra charge from the phosphate people.
And could I extrapolate to the Portland population?
It would take me a little bit of time to figure out what that is. 2.7 times 10 to the minus 6 per microgram of you're looking probably at around 3 extra lung and bladder cancer cases in your community a year from that arsenic. 3 extra lung and bladder cancer cases, that would be somewhere in the range of $12 million a year for treatment costs. And that's actually treatment costs based on 2001 numbers. That's probably considerably higher than that now.
Didn't the CDC say this was one of the 10 best health miracles of the 20th century or something?
Yeah, well, that's their claim, but unfortunately they don't have any statistically significant data to back that up. The best piece of research on whether or not fluoride, in fact, taken systemically, that is when you drink the stuff, the best study was ever done was done by the National Institute of Dental Research, actually, the part of the National Institutes of Health. They studied 39,000 U.S. teenagers and were unable to show a statistically significant difference in the number of decayed, missing, and filled teeth in the kids who lived all their life in a fluoridated community versus non-fluoridated. It's neither safe nor effective. It hasn't been shown to be effective, and there are plenty of problems with it, not the least of which is the fact that you're getting this arsenic load with the stuff that's being put in your drinking water. And it also affects, fluoride crosses the blood-brain barrier. There's at least 100 times and maybe as much as 400 times more fluoride in fluoridated drinking water than there is in human breast milk. Little babies who are drinking formula made from fluoridated water are being exposed to way excess amount of fluoride than Mother Nature ever intended. That, in fact, was one of the reasons why Arvid Carlsson, who is the Nobel Prize winner in medicine in 2000, is a Swedish scientist, was instrumental in getting Sweden to stop fluoridating, was this fact that it's likely impact on the developing brain. And now a recent study from Harvard showing that the higher the fluoride levels in drinking water supplies, the lower the IQ of the children in those areas.
Dr. William Hersey, what would you say to the citizens of Portland considering adding these fluoridating chemicals to our water?
Don't do it. Don't do it. Save your money. If you want to help out the dental health of people who, for one reason or another, don't have adequate access to dental care, buy toothbrushes, buy toothpaste. Public money would be much better spent on education and distributing toothbrushes and toothpaste in schools rather than making kids drink fluoride.
That was Dr. William Hersey, former senior scientist at the EPA. The arsenic contained in Portland's proposed fluoridating chemicals would cause tens of millions of dollars worth of lung and bladder cancer each year, as well as other unknown damage, especially to developing brains. And this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Ani and Robin to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
It's easy to do when you dial 877-500-5266 and say, yes, you want to be a sponsor of this kind of information. You are concerned about the process that is that has been undergone to try to fluoridate Portland's water. Portlanders have fought this off a couple times before, but here we are bringing you some information from medical sources looking at what it is that we need to maybe think about, that we that some people are very concerned about when it comes to the type of fluoridation that the city council has discussed, not to mention the closed-door process that has discussed it. Well, we have done stories about that for months now, and in fact, Joe Myers has done many a story on that and continues to follow this important issue for Portlanders, and really it's an issue for us all. Anywhere you are, looking at local control and access to clean and safe drinking water is an issue that, well, the entire world is facing. We face it together. Be a member, be a supporter of community radio, of independent media. Right now, dial us 877-500-5266 and make sure that your access to unfettered information keeps on going. 877-500-5266. Or online, kboo.fm. So however you choose to do it, be it on online, be it by phone, be it dropping by 20 Southeast 8th, we ask that you do it right now as we have a goal to reach of $250 for our evening news to support our volunteers' efforts as they make this news together. Isn't that right, Robin? You are a part of the evening news crew many a day every week.
That's right. I'm one of many people who come in, they give their time, they hunt down the stories, they do the writing, they do the interviewing, they do the editing of the audio that you hear.
And you get your training to do this right here at KBOO. That's one of the reasons we exist, because we want to make sure that people understand the importance of using our public airwaves. It's part of our common treasury, and it's here being used by the people and for the people. Your community radio station, hooking up community members, giving them essential training so that together we can make exciting community radio that supports values of social change, that supports values of peace, of justice, of multiculturalism, of environmentalism, of freedom of expression. These are the principles that guide KABU throughout our day. We imagine that they also guide your life. And right now, we'd like you to fill in that gap and become an active participating sponsor of Community Radio right now. Just pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm.
A new bill in the Oregon legislature is seeking to give citizens the right to record police without requiring them to obtain permission first. Oregon's current eavesdropping statute says anyone recording a conversation must first inform the people speaking. But Oregon resident Mike Nierman, who helped craft House Bill 3064, wants to make it legal for everyday citizens to tape police officers without fear of being arrested. Nierman said, quote, "It seems fair that I, a taxpayer and citizen, ought to be able to make a recording of public officials in the public official performance of their duties." In August 2008, police arrested Aloha resident Hao Sheng Vong when he recorded officers on his cell phone who were arresting his friend at a bowling alley. Police seized his phone and didn't return it until 2 months later, in October 2008, after the video had been erased. One lobbyist who represented a number of police organizations says cops worry that giving people full recording rights may cause interference with their work. But Becky Strauss of Oregon's American Civil Liberties Union sees it differently. She argues that, quote, "It's well established in other jurisdictions that it is a free expression right to record officers."
More Oregonians are switching to wireless phones and canceling their landline service, but many seniors and rural phone customers still rely on the older technology. Consumer advocates are monitoring the telecom industry to make sure those people and all consumers aren't going to be victimized by deregulation. In collaboration with the Oregon News Service, KABU's Evan Oven Stively has more.
About 4 in 10 Oregon households use only wireless phones now, canceling their landline telephone service. But many seniors and rural residents still depend on landlines, and consumer watchdog groups are working to make sure they don't lose them. Anna Montez with the Utility Reform Network says she's concerned some customers are being urged to upgrade to new internet-based telephone services when their old landline is fine.
It's really being sold as this is old technology. It's not useful technology. Nobody is using that technology anymore. And it just really is not accurate. There's still a reliance by a lot of different folks on the older technology.
Much of the copper wire pathway that phone calls travel from one landline telephone to another is being replaced by internet-based digital transmission. Telecom companies are trying to convince regulators that these calls should be considered an information service, which would mean much less regulation. Montez warns the result could be higher prices and almost no monitoring or enforcement against ripoffs. Montez says landlines still save the day in emergencies. She points out that new phones based on Internet Protocol, or IP, can lose their battery charge in a power outage.
In many instances where there have been emergencies, people have relied upon payphone, people have relied on landline telephone service, and if we were to switch over to an entirely IP-based network, we could end up being in a real mess.
Some people prefer a landline to a wireless phone because of potentially hazardous health effects of radiation that are still being debated. Government surveys by the CDC indicate most families have both landline and wireless service. This is Evan Owen Stively for KABU, reporting with help from the Oregon News Service.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KABU Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned tonight for Labor Radio at 6. In tonight's show, we hear from Portland's social equality educators and the United Auto Workers. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is expected to be warm with a mix of clouds and sunshine, highs near 61 degrees. Clouds should continue into the evening with humidity at about 80%, lows around 46.
It's 5:17, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Well, there you have it. The the Republican Party is, quote, narrow-minded and out of touch, a party of, quote, stuffy old men. That's not the pronouncement of a Democrat, but the official conclusion of the Republican Party itself, as detailed in a 100-page audit commissioned by the party's national chairman, Reince Priebus. Authored by a panel of five diehard GOP notables, the report concedes that public perception of the party is at record lows, noting with a palpable grimace the devastating attitude of one particularly important constituency. Young voters are increasingly rolling their eyes at what the party represents. Ouch! Having sized up the problem precisely, the Republican hierarchy then stepped forward with the kind of bold and inventive solution that we would expect from such leaders. Better PR. Our policies are sound, declared Priebus, but the way we communicate can be a real problem. Thus, the Repubs announced that they will launch a $10 million program to market the GOP brand to women, Latinos, young people, and others. Oh, they also intend to hire a chief technology officer to improve the party's social media outreach. Priebus described these moves as unprecedented in scope and ambition. Someone should clue him in to an old piece of country wisdom. You can put earrings on a hog, but it won't hide the ugliness. Bashing gays, immigrants, women, public employees, union members, the poor, the jobless, and more, while hugging banksters and billionaires, is a position problem, not a communication problem. This is Jim Hightower saying, and don't expect them to make any real policy changes. So many party factions denounced the audit as an unholy departure from right-wing doctrine that Priebus disavowed his ties to its conclusions even as he was releasing them. This is not my report, he weaseled.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news, and now we're asking you to pitch in, too. Joining us now are Ani and Robin to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
That's right. It is important that you dial now 877-500-5266 so you can, in fact, become a part of this legacy. Renew your membership or join KBOO anew today and know that you are a part of what brings us to you so that every time you turn KBOO on, you know that you are one of our fiscal sponsors. You are one of the reasons why we are able to do what we do. It's the work of about 500 volunteers. It's the work of over 5,000 community members pulling together all of our resources to keep community radio, the hub, the center, the hitching post to communities everywhere so that we can share information, we can share cultural interests and ideas, we can share music, we can share arts, we can share all of these things together without corporate filters, without needing to please or be beholden to corporate masters. We do it with your grassroots support. We do it by you dialing 877-500-5266. $60 a year is our individual membership. If you would like to join us for more than that, that is perfectly welcome. You can do so just $5 a month, $10 a month, really whatever amount works out for you to budget into your monthly income. Go ahead and send that into KBOO. You can set that up electronically. Just talk to one of our phone answering pals and they will let you know how it's done. It can be done very quickly, very simply. It just takes a couple minutes of your time this afternoon and you know that you become a sustainer of your community radio station. So simply dial 877-500-5266.
Or you can visit us at our website, that's kboo.fm. And I really want you to consider the investment that you're making in informed community. We're all going to be better off when we can see what's really going on, and you're not getting that from more traditional venues. They work for corporations, not for you. We're here working for you. Help us make it happen by calling 877-500-5266.
And just to let you know, for a $120 contribution, you can pick up a 4-gig audio flash drive. That's right. It's got exclusive KBOO content, including recorded talks by Ralph Nader, Helen Caldicott, David Barsamian, Winona LaDuc, Noam Chomsky, Derek Jensen, and oh, so many more. Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, Vandana Shiva, Jim Hightower, oh, so many. Right there in your very own 4-gig audio flash drive. You know, we used to occasionally try to give out 3 CDs with maybe 3 to 6 recorded talks. Well, 4 gigs is a whole lot larger. And so we've packed a whole lot of KABU original lectures, news, and information into these flash drives for your audio pleasure. And again, that can be yours for a $120 minimum pledge. You can put that on your credit card. You can send us a check. Or you can break that down to $10 a month. Whatever is the easiest way for you to do it, we just ask that you do it right now. My friend, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Or online, kboo.fm. I want to thank these restaurants that have helped the station out today by contributing a little food to keep the membership volunteers fed and happy. That's Junior's Cafe, 1742 Southeast 12th Avenue, Laurelhurst Market at 3155 East Burnside, and Funky Puffs at 1313 Northeast Alberta Street. We thank them, and we'd love to thank you when you help us reach that $250 goal that we have for the evening news. We need somebody to kick that off. Start it right now. Dial 877-500-5266.
Or visit the website at kboo.fm. You can also drop in and see us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. That's just south of Burnside. An individual membership is just $60 or $5 a month as a sustainer. You can have a T-shirt from Democracy Now! I know I sure want it. $10 a month or $120.
That's right, $120. You can do it on your credit card. You can do it $10 a month. Just call us right now, 877-500-5266. It's easy enough to do. You can also stop by to 20 Southeast 8th. That's an option I hope some people take this afternoon, because it's always wonderful to meet our listeners and to show you around, to show you what your money gets you here at KABU, show you our studios, the equipment that the volunteers use. You can meet the volunteers that make the radio station run, and you can see exactly how you are a part of things. Just drop by 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, 8th Avenue, just between Burnside and Ankeny Street. So however you choose to do it, my friend, this is the moment that we ask you to make the decision to become an active participating member of KABU today. 877-500-5266.
Guest workers at a Pennsylvania McDonald's join with Chicago area workers to demand a meeting with the fast food company after voicing concerns about working conditions. The workers are in the U.S. under a State Department program that's drawn criticism in the past for poor working conditions at a Hershey's packing plant and a Walmart seafood supplier. Workers describe what they say as sub-minimum wage pay, wage theft, overpriced substandard housing, and retaliation against students to suppress lawful complaints. McDonald's has said it's investigating the allegations and that the Pennsylvania franchise has agreed to leave the McDonald's system. Free Speech Radio News host Dorian Marina has more.
Earlier today, we spoke with one of the workers, 27-year-old Jorge Victor Rios from Argentina. He worked at the McDonald's near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and was one of the first workers to raise concerns about conditions there. He began by describing to us the conditions where he worked and lived.
We were deducted money to pay for the rent from our paychecks. We were getting paid minimum wage, $7.25 an hour, and I've been working average of 25 hours a week, but the schedule was mostly done relying on us being on call for when they designed the schedule. They would give us a few hours so that we would be on call for them, since we needed to buy groceries, so we needed to work more hours.
So even when you were not scheduled to work, you had to be on call for the restaurant when they wanted to call on you?
Exactly. So we would do that because we needed to work more hours to make more money to be able to pay in the first place, to be able to pay for that rent, for the basement we were living in, and then to also make some money to buy groceries and basic hygiene products.
How much was the housing deduction you had to pay?
$75 a week per person, and it was six of us living in that basement. So in a month, that gives a total of almost $2,000, $1,800. And in the case of other students, they were living in an even smaller basement than ours, and there were eight people living there, four Asian girls and four Chilean guys. And yes, they were also deducted about the same amount of money.
And this was for the living in the basement of one of those properties in the area there?
Exactly. All these houses were owned by our employer.
And what was your understanding of the J-1 visa program? It's billed as having a cultural exchange component to it. What was your understanding when you signed up?
Well, I read all about the J-1 program. When you read it, you feel it's pretty serious and pretty sensible. It's supposed to be a cultural exchange program with a working component to it. And the cultural exchange experience, according to the rules of the program that the Department of State designed, says that the cultural exchange component should be from beginning to end. So the working part is just an element that allows people, participants of this program, to recover the money or part of the money that they spent to participate in this program, which in my case was more than $3,000.
So around $3,000. Now, some of that went to GeoVisions, the recruiter, the labor provider in this case?
That includes the plane tickets. We paid to GeoVisions more than $1,000. And then all the paperwork we did in the U.S. Embassy back in our countries, plus the plane tickets. That's the total is more than $3,000.
And did you find a cultural exchange part of your experience in Pennsylvania?
No, honestly, I didn't, because the chances we had to actually interact with, have real interaction with Americans or learn about them were minimal.
That's Jorge Victor Rios from Argentina, one of the guest workers at a Pennsylvania McDonald's. We're joined now by Elizabeth Parisian, Policy Director for Stand Up Chicago. She joined Rios and other workers at Actions Today at a Chicago McDonald's. Welcome to FSRN.
Great to be here.
Well, McDonald's did respond in this case. It said it began investigating the situation in Pennsylvania immediately upon learning of the issues involved. The company also said that the franchisee has agreed to leave the McDonald's system. So, Elizabeth Parisian, your response to the response from McDonald's, and also how this particular case connects to larger issues for fast food workers.
Well, I should say that McDonald's reaction was unusual, and it really is quite a victory for these workers. McDonald's needs to do more. That's the message that we're delivering today, and this is what we're going to continue to focus on. I mean, McDonald's is an extremely profitable company, and their entire business structure is based off of creating a pool of low-wage, contingent, vulnerable workers. And the message we want to bring to them is that this is the McDonald's brand. You know, even if this is a franchisee, this is, they're selling your products, they're bearing your logo, this is your company and this is your business model, and it's time to make a change to that, because McDonald's and we're saying to them, you have an obligation to pay your workers enough for them to support their families. No one working in this country should be living in poverty, and it's time for them to step up to the plate and actually improve their working conditions and improve their pay.
Elizabeth Parisian is Policy Director for Stand Up Chicago. She joined us to discuss the actions taken by guest workers and fast food workers for McDonald's. Elizabeth Parisian, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Today, Congress passed a temporary budget to avert some of the worst aspects of the emergency cuts mandated by the bipartisan agreement known as sequestration. But a piece of legislation slipped in the back door that has opponents of large biotech firms furious. In what some are calling the Monsanto Protection Act, biotech companies will be allowed to continue planting genetically modified crops, even while legal action against the use of these crops is proceeding, which could preempt any legal injunction. The The law now goes before President Obama, but because of the contentious legislation was slipped in as a rider, and due to the sensitive nature of the budget bill, rejecting the new provision may be hard for the president to do. For more on this story, KBOO's Mike Klepfer spoke with David Murphy of the food advocacy group Food Democracy Now.
What is this piece of legislation you're calling the Monsanto Protection Act?
In September, we almost hit the fiscal cliff, and what happened is Congress passed a 6-month bill instead that comes due on March 27th, which is Wednesday, and so Congress has passed a continuing resolution, and on the Senate side, the Appropriations Committee, someone allowed a rider to be slipped, which is basically an amendment or a change to the bill, provision 735, that contains an allowance. Really, basically, we are calling it the Monsanto Protection Act, because what it does is it, if a corporation or biotech company like Monsanto or DuPont or Dow Chemical ask or require the Secretary of Agriculture to, they request from him, or a farmer requests from him, to plant a new genetically engineered crop, they have to plant that crop, despite the fact that it currently could be in a court case, that particular application. So every year, biotech companies like Monsanto apply, try to get a new crop approved at the USDA. Right now, there's 13 new crops awaiting approval, including Dow Chemical's 2,4-D or Agent Orange Corn, Agent Orange Corn or soy, and also Monsanto has 5 crops currently awaiting approval at the USDA. So what will happen is if this provision is passed into law and not vetoed by President Obama and sent back to Congress, what will happen is if a biotech company wants their seed to be planted, all they have to do is send in an application and then request that it be planted after it's been reviewed. And there will be no ability for a lawsuit to be filed or for a court to have an injunction. There are several situations where GMO crops have been approved. One is Starlink corn, and the other one is Liberty Link rice, where they've contaminated other farmers' fields and caused significant economic harm. Over almost $1 billion with Liberty Link rice, and the same is true with Starlink corn. So that's one of the negative impacts that a rider like this has. It means that potentially dangerous and harmful, economically harmful GMO crops could be planted. It could also harm the environment, contaminate farmers' fields, and have potentially have significant health problems. But because a biotech company believes that they should have, you know, they should not have to submit to the rule of law, they've made it so their crops can be approved.